Welcome to My Heart Songs podcast number 90. Will technology save us? Coronavirus part 6. As the number actually ill from this coronavirus tops 1 million worldwide, and more than half of humanity, some 4 billion people, have been told to stay at home, this question of technology riding to the rescue seems important to address. What is different this go-around compared with the many maladies and plagues that have afflicted humans in the past is the incredible advances that have been created over the last half century. From low to high tech, various initiatives can give us all some real hope. With all Americans now officially urged to wear a mask when going outside the home, various do-it-yourself, sew-your-own instructions and videos have appeared. This week, Abbott Diagnostics, a medical device maker, announced a 5-minute test capable of supplying 50,000 tests a day. Fragments of the coronavirus genome can quickly be detected when present at high levels. Via emergency use authorization from the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, authorized laboratories and patient care settings will soon have such capability, as long as the reagent supply chain stabilizes. Take a swab from the nose or the back of the throat, mix with a chemical solution that breaks open the virus and releases its DNA, RNA. Insert into a small 7-pound box, and voila, identify and amplify select sequences of the coronavirus genome while ignoring contamination from other viruses. When people can easily be massively tested, they can be identified even before they have symptoms. Self-quarantine then means they can't spread anything. If we wait, as has been happening because of lack of rapid and easy testing, then people isolate only when they already have symptoms, having already spread the contagion. More testing gives us a handle on that elusive denominator, and I remain confident that the expected mortality will continue to decline to levels perhaps twice that of normal flu, certainly not 10 times. As we continue to practice compassionate spaciousness, mask wearing, frequent and proper hand washing, and disinfecting some surfaces, less virus will be spread. That will reassure all of us, and once the curve of infection flattens sufficiently so as to not overwhelm our healthcare systems, we can get back to more normal life in terms of social interactions and business. I predict that will occur within weeks, not months. While hydroxychloroquine, 200 milligrams 3 times a day for 10 days, combined with azithromycin Z-Pak, is currently being used in some locations for the sickest patients based on a small French and Chinese data, we really currently have no antiviral meds for COVID-19. Medication strategy is designed to work in one of four ways. They block receptor entry of the virus into the cell, prevent replication if the virus does enter, stop the shedding of viral packets which might go on to infect additional cells, or kill the whole infected cell factory itself. More than 70 drugs are currently being studied for possible efficacy. We already have a vaccine candidate that has produced strong neutralizing antibodies to the virus. Johnson & Johnson will continue animal studies this summer with human trials to begin in September. Moderna has already begun early trials of a vaccine with healthy volunteers, and both companies, along with two others, have stepped up and taken the investment risk to ramp up manufacturing capability in this country, potentially producing 1 billion doses for next season. One of the bottlenecks in vaccine research seems to be a worldwide shortage of transgenic ACE2 mice, genetically modified with a humanized gene to make it more suitable for study with coronaviruses. Jackson Lab, a nonprofit in Maine, sells more than 11,000 varieties of mice for experiments and is now breeding using mice sperm samples from mice used in the fight against SARS because it's simply too expensive to continually maintain a colony for every potential disease. Designed by the English social theorist Jeremy Bentham in the 18th century, a panopticon is a type of institutional building and a system of control. Imagine a circular prison with cells arranged around a central well from which prisoners could at all times be observed. Now there is much discussion of an electronic pandemic panopticon. From facial recognition to location-detecting smartphones, there exists the real possibility for tracking diseases in real time. China used data from state-run mobile phone carriers to locate people who violated quarantine. Apps already exist to classify people based on their travel history and risk of exposure to the virus. Using big data and the internet, the flow of each person can be tracked, raising obvious privacy concerns, but also offering incredible tools to monitor spread and compliance with health directives. Kinsa, a medical technology firm, has accumulated data from more than 1 million internet-connected thermometers in use across the U.S., a less invasive, non-draconian observation measure. The information shows a rapid drop in the number of people with fevers after states issue stay-at-home orders, restaurant closures, and other strict measures. It may be a low-tech technology that actually proves that compassionate spacing actually works. And fully preventing the viral animal-to-human zoonotic leaps demands bringing more public health expertise, monitoring, and basic sanitation to Asia's wet markets. Eddie Hillesum, the Dutch author killed at age 29 in Auschwitz, reminds us, "I am not alone in my tiredness or sickness or fears, but at one with millions of others from many centuries, and it is all part of life." While all these techno marvels can assist us in our ongoing dance with emerging infectious diseases, ultimately, it is our human aspirational qualities that will see us through, being mindful, caring, connected, cooperative, open-hearted, in service, and free. Thanks again for listening, and remember, friends and family can easily sign up at myheartsongs.org.